fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I am Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, welcome back in on a snowy, snowy day in Green Bay.
Well, I'm in Milwaukee, so I don't have to worry about Green Bay, and you guys got slammed. We just got lots of wind, and it's really cold. And I have not, the only time I've been out today was to get something out of the trunk of my car. So I've been hunkered down.
Spoon, it's good to hear your voice. I'm going to give full transparency to our listeners here. We just did an open, and Cassidy, as you heard, asked how we were doing, and there was radio silence on both ends. So we're both good. Spoon and I are good. And Cassidy, how about yourself?
Yeah, we're trying too hard to think of something witty, and you couldn't, which I don't even have to respond to that. It says all you need to say, that nobody could think of anything. No, I'm like Spoon, hunkered down with a little bit more snow. I've kept my blinds up all day so I could watch it. It was like a snow globe. And then I saw the Packers tweet a video as well from Lambeau Field that said snow globe feels. So it's plenty. Spoon, we've got all your snow for you up here.
Yeah, we should probably explain to people that we have been barred from the premises at Lambeau Field. They've gone into super protocol, and we're not even allowed into our offices, which couldn't be farther away from the players if we tried. There's no windows. It's not like we could breathe on anybody. But that's the rules. We can't go to practice unless it's outside. It wasn't outside today. So basically, we're all working from home.
It feels very much like 2020 with one exception, one huge exception. I don't know about you, but it's weird to have this. It's nice, weird way to have this face-to-face video interaction. If you don't know, these Zoom calls for 2 years now have been without players and coaches being able to see who's asking them questions. It's basically been they've been responding to the big voice in the room. And so now they actually can see our faces. Apparently my recliner was a big hit today. I don't know. It was comfortable, but it's just like 2020, except the Packers have finally caught up technologically wise.
I'm giving Spoon credit for that, because he said something to Matt LaFleur about it.
Yeah, I did kind of tease him about it. The downside is that you have to get dressed and you got to take a shower.
They can only see you from the waist up, Spoon.
I know, but I don't want to take a chance.
That first time, I literally, full disclosure, I might not have been wearing a shirt. That first time, and I logged on.
Oh, God, said, don't give me that.
It said, join with video. And before I clicked yes, I was like, oh, shoot, I need a shirt. Like that. It was completely foreign concept to me. So I've got a shirt now. We're good to go.
That's so funny to me, because see, like, I came from Florida where I covered the Gators and the Jaguars. And that's how we did the Zooms for the entire time we were on Zoom. It was where they could see everyone. And so that's what I was used to, and made sure you're always in the right spot. They can see into your house. One night, Dan Mullen and I made the Sports Center cold open because he could see into my house and was making fun of me for having Christmas lights up before Thanksgiving. And he didn't think that was allowed. So yeah, it's nice when you can see everybody's face. And we're saying all that while on a podcast where people aren't going to be able to see our face. Just pull up some pictures of us and smile at those as you listen. Guys, one of the reasons they are practicing inside this week, and while we cannot be there because of that, is because they're playing this weekend in Detroit, which is in a dome. Usually if they play in a dome, they practice inside as much as possible. If they play outside, they practice outside. That's probably about the most interesting piece of news I can bring you about this game this weekend. The Packers are going to play Detroit. It's a divisional game. That's all that can be said. There are two brothers that'll face off, but they are both on offense, so they're not going to be lining up against each other unless it's on special teams. Equanimeous St. Brown and Amon's St. Brown, both receivers. So that'll be fun, you know, especially for their parents. Getting to see them face off again for the second time this year. But
well, it'll be great for us to see the laser show, though.
Assuming
he starts. I mean, he's a media darling, and we've all overestimated his talents, me in particular.
Overestimated his talents.
Yes, yes. Because he was a good practice player, and he came out of nothing. You know, he was really awful in college, but he had a big arm, and McCarthy worked with him for a year and really improved him. And then LaFleur worked with him for a couple years. And during that pandemic training camp, he looked really good. So he's got to come through for me on Sunday to save my reputation.
Jared Goff did practice again today. That's now 2 days in a row he's practiced. We're filming Thursday night. So he practiced Wednesday and Thursday as a limited participant with that knee injury. So we'll wait and see. But if we see Spoon hoofing it towards the Detroit press conference on Sunday, we'll know where he's going.
Well, I wouldn't miss Jamal Williams if they were doing it either, because he's a blast.
That's a must-see Zoom right there. That's a must-see Zoom.
Yeah, although it'll be in person in Detroit.
Didn't he go to one of the Zooms with his helmet on?
He did.
Yeah. He's a
kid. The way only Jamal Williams can.
Yep.
That sounds like fun. Other than some of those storylines we mentioned somewhat tongue in cheek, there is one that has sort of dominated this game, and you almost hate it for the Lions that this is the conversation that's dominating this game, but it's whether or not Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and a couple of the other stars will play. And Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams have both said very clearly, I want to play, I plan to play, but of course, they're probably not going to play the entire game. Spoon, I'll start with you, and then Ryan will come to you. What is the argument for and against for those that haven't been paying attention to it or those that haven't heard it yet? And can you see, I guess, the argument for both sides?
No, I can't. I wrote my column this morning that they need to hold out three guys, Rodgers, Adams, and Kenny Clark. Those are three indispensable guys that if you get them hurt in the final week, then that's malpractice. You know, there is whatever chances Matt LaFleur has of a coach of the year would just fly out the door if one of those guys got hurt. So I think, and I still think it's up in the air. He keeps saying, you know, everybody's going to play, but I wouldn't be surprised if on Friday or on Sunday, Saturday, they just say Rodgers isn't playing, Adams isn't playing, Clark, maybe a couple other guys, because Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to play in another game. Devontae Adams doesn't need to play in another game. Kenny Clark doesn't need to get mauled and knocked around. The other people do. You know, some of the other starters do, but those three do not.
So you think all of this so far this week is what, gamesmanship?
I think LaFleur is set now. I think LaFleur is sending the message, we're in this to win it. Uh-huh. You know, that's the message to the whole team. You know, and behind closed doors, he's like, Rodgers, don't worry, you're not going to play. But he wants the team to continue its momentum. And that's a smart thing to do. So he's saying he may play them. I don't know. But to me, that's the smart thing to do is you tell everybody, everybody's playing. You prepare like everybody's playing. Mm-hmm. And then at the last second, you pull those guys out because you don't want them to get hurt.
So, like, Rodgers practiced today, Thursday. Do you think that that's part of it is, like, tell him he's playing so that he practices right, if that makes sense, because he hasn't been practicing?
I don't think any of it has to do with him. I think it has to do with the rest of the team. Everybody needs to have their heads on straight, and they need to play as a team like they care. Uh-huh. But in the end, don't play Rodgers, don't play Adams, don't play Kenny Clark.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here. That's a heck of a call on your part if you're right. Because I got to say, I'm not getting the impression by anything that Matt LaFleur has said this week that he's not thinking about playing these guys. These guys are going to play. They're going to play. I don't know how long they're going to play. But it would be, at this point, it'd be shocking if they didn't play based on everything Matt LaFleur has said. I will say this. I think that I understand the rationale of playing. I'm not as anti-play as you are, Spoon, because I think the most important thing at this juncture, it has nothing to do with this week's game. This week's game is basically a preseason game. It's irrelevant. But it does have to do with being as sharp as possible physically and competitively come the divisional round game. And I think the best chance of that happening for the whole of the team, I'm with you. Like, Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to play, although I think an important part of that is the fact that Aaron Rodgers did practice on this Thursday this week for the first time since October, because when he came back from COVID-19 and the toe, having not practiced, barely practiced at all, basically what he's been doing right now, he was really rusty in that Seattle game. And you cannot have a rusty Aaron Rodgers in the divisional round game if he's not able to practice. So I think it's important that he was able to practice on this Thursday. Maybe that swings a little bit of how long he plays in that decision. But competitively, having the team together and going out there and playing at least a little, playing a half, I get that it opens you up, if you're Matt LaFleur, to all kinds of second guessing. People will be saying that it was malpractice if one of those guys gets a serious injury. But in terms of keeping this team as sharp as it can be physically and competitively, I do think the best way to do that is by playing a little bit, going through the week and playing at least a little bit in Detroit.
Now, he has practiced, I think, a couple of times, but not he hasn't practiced as a full participant since the toe. That being said, if, like Spoon said, if something happens to him, you're going into the playoffs with Jordan Love, and if you play Sunday without Aaron Rodgers, you're playing Jordan Love. One way or the other, there's a decent chance we're going to see some Jordan Love. Not saying that we think Aaron Rodgers will get hurt, but we're going to see some Jordan Love here soon. We have only seen him once this season in a 13-7 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt LaFleur was asked today, Thursday, what improvements he has seen in Jordan Love since that game. Because since that game, he has taken largely first-team reps because of Aaron Rodgers sitting out, nursing the toe. And he said the main thing has been the footwork, because he said that's the most important thing to playing quarterback to him. So that being said, Ryan, I'll start with you this time. What improvements do you want to see from Jordan Love when we inevitably see him for some time on Sunday to feel comfortable that he has improved and taken the coaching he needed to get better since Kansas City?
Well, go back to what his biggest issue was in Kansas City. And his biggest issue was not recognizing and picking up the blitz. So I would start there, being able to pick up the blitz, being able to read and diagnose before the snap and know where you're going with the football much quicker than he did in Kansas City. From there, yeah, the fundamentals, the footwork, the big thing is accuracy. You know, I mean, I think that he left Kansas City with an open question of whether or not he was that inaccurate because of nerves, which is a legitimate thing. Your first NFL start on the road in a crazy week with everything going on off the field, no real heads up until Wednesday of that week. And you're at Arrowhead. That's significant. Was it the nerves, or is he just that inaccurate? And I think that getting more of a sample size would be very beneficial to knowing. I think the Packers have an idea, but we don't have an idea of whether or not his inaccuracy issues in Kansas City were nerves or just him. Getting to see that, I think would be, I'd be very curious to see if he has better ball placement, better rhythm, and being able to pick up the blitz.
Spoon, y'all have told me about how when Aaron Rodgers first arrived, he had a horrible throwing motion and he had to have it worked out of him. Is there anything like that that you've seen from Jordan Love that you feel like, hey, I could see him possibly taking a step, or if I saw a step forward in this area on Sunday, I would feel more comfortable about him going into another unsure offseason?
Yeah, it wasn't that Rodgers had a horrible motion. It's that he carried the ball too high. And that's what Jeff Tedford taught at Cal. And it did him well. I mean, it did him well in college. It got, I don't have any problem with it. It's just in the pros, it's got to be down lower because you got to get rid of it quicker. And so anyway, with Jordan Love, I see a little bit of a windup. And you know, the one thing that Favre and Rodgers have in common is the whip motion, that they can just, they're so fast with their arm speed and their delivery. And what I want to see from Jordan Love is him just letting it go. Just don't hesitate, throw it, it gets picked off, it gets picked off. But he needs to, he's very reluctant to pull the trigger, so to speak. He looks like he's hesitating on stuff, and he's late on throws. I just want to see him rip it. And I think one of the coaches said that this summer, it was like, they're keep encouraging him, just let it fly. Yeah. And once he can do that, then we'll know more about him. But, you know, in this game, he should be able to do that. It's 2 years now, and, you know, he should be able to move the team.
Yeah. Something I want to see from him a little bit more too is, you know, the mobility was supposed to be one of his strengths, and I don't feel like we have seen it be anything but a detriment to him so far, except for when he picked up that first down the other night against the Vikings, when he got those last couple of series. He needs, if you're going to use your legs, you have to use them smart, what's the word I'm looking for when you're like having to jump out of an airplane, like the strap?
Ripcord.
Thank you.
We got a winner.
You got a winner. If you're going to use your legs, they have to be a weapon, not a ripcord. And I want to see him using them correctly, maybe even on some more designed runs, like get him out on a couple of boots just to make him feel comfortable. And, you know, if you're going to run maybe more of like an, even I hesitate to use this term because I don't feel like it applies to Matt LaFleur's offense, but if you're going to maybe even use some RPO style stuff with Jordan Love, then make sure he understands what his options are and what he can do on each play, and not just sort of freak out, if that makes sense.
The sense that I get is that he's so determined to be a pocket passer. He just seems like he's reluctant or hesitant to use that part of his game. And I do wonder, Cassidy, if the fact that he was able to get a 3rd and 10 pickup on the ground with a 10-yard scramble might be a reminder that, hey, there's more than one way to move the football. When plays break down, when rush lanes are there, take advantage of them, because you can pick up yards that way. So I think it's an interesting balance for a young quarterback. And I think that it'll be interesting to see if he gets more comfortable with that part of the game. I'm with you. I certainly think that more balance there would benefit him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good point you made, because it made it sound like I was thinking he takes off every time. And that's not what I was saying at all. I want to see him use his legs correctly and smart, if that makes sense.
When there's an opportunity, when there's a chance, don't hesitate. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, don't confuse him with Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray or anybody like that, even Mahomes. That's not who he is. He is a pocket passer, and that's one of the reasons they liked him. And I mean, he did run for his life a lot his senior year. He had a terrible offensive line and he had to run like crazy, and so it's there. But if the running part comes last, I think that's okay. I think he needs to get the passing part down. Stay in the pocket, hit your guys. Be sure you can make the throws that they're expecting you to make. I think the running stuff comes sort of naturally when, you know, all of a sudden you got a guy bearing down on you, you spin and move. And so, yeah,
I do that Sunday.
I'm more interested in seeing him throw the ball.
That's a fair point. And I'm sure we will be discussing all of this after the game on Sunday, because we're going to see Jordan Love at some point. As for who else we might see, that's still up in the air. You know, will Jaire Alexander be activated off the COVID-19 list in time? Will David Bakhtiari, will he actually make an appearance? Maybe, possibly, you know, he's been at practice, possibly even Josh Myers. Spoon, what's kind of the sense you get, you know, do you have an ear to the ground? Who do you think we'll see? Who's the most likely that we'll see on Sunday and the least likely?
Well, I think if Jaire Alexander hadn't come down with COVID, there was a chance he would play. But I don't know with, you know, I don't know if he's had symptoms or what, but the one thing you got to make sure is he's 100%, that he's comfortable, that he can go in and throw his shoulder around if he has to. I kind of think he's not going to play, but we'll see. I really have no clue about that one. Bakhtiari, I think if everything goes right and he's able to practice Friday, I think they'll put him in for a series or two and get him just a little bit of work just to see how he's doing. And I don't know that there's anybody else. You know, Billy Turner's on COVID and he hasn't been practicing, so he's not coming back. Za'Darius Smith still has not practiced, so that remains kind of a pipe dream. Mm-hmm. Josh Myers, I think we could see him. I think he might take a few snaps. It wouldn't be bad for him to get some snaps in at the end of the game or a series or two. So I do think the two offensive linemen will play, and I'm skeptical about Alexander.
If you could have both David Bakhtiari and Josh Myers get some snaps on Sunday, I mean, Ryan, how big is that to have that under their belt heading into the playoffs?
Well, considering I think David Bakhtiari was the swing absentee that decided the NFC champion last year, it's huge. You're able to get David Bakhtiari and Josh Myers back on that offensive line. You're talking about being a whole lot more comfortable if you have to go against that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive front in a playoff game, which that's, I mean, you look at the matchups in the NFC right now, that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive front against the Packers offensive line that has been beat to all hell all year, that's probably got to be the matchup that scares you the most if you're the Packers.
Right.
So to get those two guys back, that would be huge. There's no question that would, from a matchup standpoint, that'd be enormous.
I question whether they would start Myers through the playoffs just because he hasn't played in so long and he's a rookie, and Lucas Patrick has been pretty solid. You know, if there's one area where you don't really want to screw up, you know, mentally, it's center, where you got to set all the protections or change them if Rodgers, you know, doesn't have a chance to set the protection or something changes. I think Lucas Patrick has settled in there. Myers is a better player. He's going to be a better player, much better. He gives you some size there. But to me, that'd be a little bit risky to go back to him at this point. We'll see. I don't know.
That's an interesting point, Spoon. I've thought about that too, because he is a rookie and he's had a truncated rookie season. I mean, he's had a really shortened rookie season. The thing that I keep going back to, though, is he's a rookie, but he's a second round center. Like he's second round center is a really good center, and he was playing really well when he was healthy, and you're putting him up against. I get it. Lucas Patrick's not been a problem, and that is very, very impressive on Lucas Patrick's part, because at the end of the day, Lucas Patrick is not only not a second round center, he's an undrafted guard. So a second-round center, even a rookie, compared to an undrafted guard, they're not the same guy.
Either way, it gives them depth that they didn't have. So if they stick with Patrick and something happens to a guard, they can put Myers in at center and move Patrick over. You know, right now, they don't have depth. And I think that's what they're looking for, especially with Myers and even Bakhtiari to some degree. You know, if they don't know whether he can last the whole game, it still would be nice to have him around, you know, ready. And maybe if he just starts this, they make it to the Super Bowl and he starts the Super Bowl. So there's a lot of caveats here that we don't know yet.
Yeah. Speaking of depth, somewhere that it seems like they most certainly will have it if everyone comes back is at corner. It's a good problem to have, too many corners, but that's about to be the situation the Packers find themselves in if Jaire Alexander is able to return off of the reserve COVID-19 list and, of course, from that shoulder injury. The assistant coaches spoke today, and you came away, Ryan, with an interesting kind of takeaway, I guess you could say, on what the corner situation might be. Kind of take us through it and break it down on what it could look like when Jaire Alexander does return.
I was a little surprised that Jerry Gray, the DB's coach, did not rule out Jaire Alexander playing in the slot. I know Spoon has been on this, you know, Jaire Alexander in the slot train, but for me, I don't put a guy with that shoulder in the middle of the field, especially when he can shut down half the field for you in coverage. I was fully, you know, when Joe Barry came in and you got that star position in the slot, I was fully on Jaire Alexander in the star spot because he is that talented. He's got the speed. He's a physical guy, but he's undersized. He's coming off a shoulder injury, and I think you want to protect him. So I was surprised that Jerry Gray did not rule that out. Here's the thing, though. Jerry Gray also didn't rule out Eric Stokes potentially going to the slot because I asked if that was just too much to give a rookie, especially as well as Eric Stokes played on the perimeter. And he said that, you know, right now it's best for Eric Stokes to play on the perimeter. But at some point, he said, until we get a guy like Jaw back, and then maybe we've got another decision to make. So this is a bridge they're going to have to cross at some point. I don't know when that point will be, because I think Jaire Alexander will be worked in. He's not going to be thrown into the fire 100% of the snaps like you usually see at that position right off the bat. But at some point, this is a bridge that they certainly could cross. And I don't know. You got three perimeter. You want your top three corners on the field. Your top three corners, Jaire Alexander, Eric Stokes, Rasul Douglas, they're all perimeter guys. There's not a slot guy in there.
Right. I mean, Spoon, as he said, you've sort of been on this slot train here. And what people need
to do. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't put it that way. I'll explain what.
Before you get into it, though, let's just kind of break it down for in case somebody might not understand what the difference in a slot corner versus the outside corner is. Well, one of them is sort of self-explanatory. Outside corner plays the sideline. Slot corner plays the middle of the field. A slot corner has to be a unique combination in a DB because you're close to the ball. So you have to be fast. You have to be incredibly smart, but you also have to be really physical because you are in the middle of the field. You're closer to the trenches. It's not something you can just slide any DB into. It's not something you can just slide any corner into. A slot corner is a unique position. I covered a slot corner in college that I remember thinking at the time, he makes that look easy. He got drafted purely to be a slot corner because of it. And now he's arguably one of the best slot corners in the NFL, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. It's a very niche position, and you can't just throw anybody into it. Okay, go ahead, Spoon.
Yeah, Eric Stokes can't play the slot. He didn't play the slot at Georgia. He was an outside guy, even when they wanted to met, you know, even they played LSU. He talked about that. Jamar Chase, he never covered Jamar Chase because Jamar Chase was in the slot. So I don't think there's any chance they do that. This is what I think they'll do. So to start out, Jaire Alexander will probably play in the nickel. And what they'll do is they may take Stokes off the field and go with Sullivan in the slot. Or if they put Alexander as a starter, they take Stokes off the field, Sullivan is the nickel, and then in dime, they bring Stokes back on the field and they use Sullivan and Alexander in the slot. And he doesn't have to tackle for the run in the dime. In the dime, you're playing pass. And all of a sudden, then you've got Jaire Alexander in the middle of the field. You got these four corners that you really like on the field. Someone's going to have to sit a little bit. You can't play all three of those guys all the time. And it's okay. You don't have to have all three of them on the field. I think, you know, Chandon Sullivan is solid and he's the one guy who has the experience playing a slot. So I would bet by playoff game, maybe by the divisional game, Alexander, if he's healthy, he's starting. Douglas is at the other side. Sullivan's in the slot. And they play a bunch of dime with Stokes.
You know, Shannon Sullivan had a pretty brutal NFC Championship game last year, though. I guess that is a good problem to have. But if you do that, you're not getting your best three corners on the field.
Well, they just need to take Spoon's advice. He sounds like he's got it. He's got it ready for him.
He does. He's got the P's and Q's all. He's got the details.
Well, you cannot put Alexander in the slot on early downs, because then his shoulder comes into play, and you don't want him having to fill in the run. Sullivan can do that. You know, maybe in nickel passing situations, you take Sullivan off the field and you put Alexander in. But they're going to have to work Alexander back in. I don't think he's, you know, whenever he starts, it might not be the whole time. You know, they've rotated before three corners, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to do. So anyway, my slot with Alexander is in the dime. He can do it in the dime. I wouldn't play him there, you know, on early downs.
Yeah. Let's kind of go into it. You said this is what they might end up having to do in the NFC by the divisional round. If they make it through the divisional round, they make it through the NFC Championship, and they make it to the Super Bowl. Actually, let me rephrase that question. If they make it to the NFC Championship and stumble yet again and don't make it to the Super Bowl, what will have been the reason? Ryan, go.
Boy, here's where I keep going back to. I don't know if it's one specific part of this team for me. I've covered four straight NFC Championship game losses, and just because you keep getting back to that stage doesn't mean you actually win one. Here's what I remember asking Brian Gutekunst immediately after this latest NFC Championship game loss, what's the missing piece? What's the missing ingredient on this roster to get yourself over this threshold that you just cannot seem to pass? And his answer was very, very simple. It's very clear. You got to show up. You got to show up. I don't think this roster has let's put it this way. I think this roster has all the pieces you need to win a Super Bowl. I think it's got all the pieces you need. They're the best record in the NFL through the first 17 weeks. The only 13-win team. They clinched the one seed with a week to go. That's tough to do. It takes a heck of a team to do it. I three straight games now, they haven't shown up. They didn't show up in Atlanta. They didn't show up in San Francisco. They didn't show up last year. So for me, the biggest thing is not a positional thing. It's not personnel. It's actually showing up on that stage, showing up in the playoffs and not laying an egg, which they've done way too many times in recent years.
Spoon? You agree?
I think it comes down to Aaron Rodgers. I think the issue, he has to outplay the other quarterback. He has to have a dominant game. This entire team is built around him and his talents. You know, with Tampa, they were a defensive team with a really good defense. That's their signature. And they brought in Brady to complement that. And Brady was exactly what they needed. It put them over the top. Rodgers is the Buccaneers defense, and Joe Barry and that defense is Tom Brady. So, you know, you need that defense to play well. You need the special teams, but Rodgers has to be that guy who in 2010 was just far and above the best player on the field. And he's going to have to make plays that, you know, MVPs make. And I think that's going to be the real test, is how high of a level can he play in the playoffs?
Well, I hate to tell you, but you're both wrong. I'm just kidding.
I'm always wrong, Cassidy.
You've yet to be wrong to me, Spoon. I actually do agree with you both, but I'm going to add another layer to it. I think there's one more thing that's going to have to change to help them, not necessarily change, but grow. I think you could argue some coaching decisions that Matt LaFleur made last year is what lost him that NFC Championship game, among other things, but that was part of it. When you get to that level in the playoffs, that's where the coaches are just as important as the players. Is he going to make the right decisions? Has he learned in his past 2 years and his past two trips to the NFC Championships? Can he out-coach? And the NFL is largely about the players, but when you get to that stage of the playoffs, can he out-coach the coach that's on the other sideline? I think that can be a huge factor in it as well.
That's a great point. Let's go through who those coaches could be.
If you make it to the Super Bowl, it could be Bill Belichick.
Well, no, let's talk about NFC.
Okay.
So Sean McVay. Can he out-coach Sean McVay?
He did last year.
Okay.
In the divisional game.
Can he out-coach Kyle Shanahan?
He got out-coached in 2019. And it's a championship game.
To be honest, yeah. I don't think he out-coached Kyle Shanahan early this year.
I don't know. There wasn't anything that told me that they were
fired. It was closer.
Yeah, yeah.
It was closer. The 2019 NFC Championship game, the student absolutely lost to the teacher.
Yeah. Bruce Arians.
I don't know if he can out-coach Bruce Arians.
I don't know that he got out-coached last year in the NFC Championship game. You know, fourth and goal from the 8, I get the reasoning. Would I have done it? Maybe, but I get the reasoning.
The one reason I give the nod is that the play at the end of the half, Patton were not on the same page, and that's the head coach's fault.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. It was great reporting on your part too, Spoon.
He's got to call a timeout there. So I guess in that case, but that's one game. I'm just hypothetically, Mike McCarthy, I know what Packer fans would say if he were up against Mike McCarthy.
Would that take
Matt LaFleur all day long.
I actually think Matt LaFleur could outcoach Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy's not a bad coach.
He makes questionable decisions and in big moments.
Game management can be an issue for him. Yes.
Game management is an issue, and that's part of being a head coach.
He sure likes those timeouts at the end of the half, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. But so does Matt LaFleur.
How many timeouts do
they give up? They never have enough timeouts at the end.
Yeah. Matt LaFleur treats timeouts like they're pennies. He just throws them away.
He treats challenges that way too.
He does. He sure does.
Two weeks ago, it bit him. And this past week, he got lucky because both times he put out a challenge this past week, he won them both. Both of them were questionable decisions to challenge. It's like, you really are going to use your challenge at this point on that?
Yeah, that made sense to me.
I disagree with that first one. He was clearly down and saved 11 yards. Then it was early in the game. And without those, I mean, it sounds like, what's 11 yards? But 11 yards at that point was like two decent Dalvin Cook rushes to field goal range. 3 points early in a game? And here's the thing. It was an obvious call. I mean, you look at the replay. Preston Smith touched him. He was down.
It was the white glove against the white t-shirt and the white pants. It could have not gone his way.
Yeah, I agree with you, Cassidy. I wouldn't have called it. And plus you have, you know, that leaves you with two, and he could have had three remaining throughout the game. And I just think that's too early to use one, unless it costs you points.
That's what I said. It wasn't even like in the red zone or anything. Yeah. So all of those are things that I would say I would not necessarily worry about, but I would have questions about, you know, has that been something that is he going to help them get over the final hump, or is he going to hinder them? So we shall see. We shall see. Guys, I'm actually going to give you a topic for your final 60 seconds today.
Oh, okay.
I like instructions.
Do all field actions impact MVP voting?
Oh, great question. Yes. Now, let me clarify that. I would not have voted for Ray Rice as MVP. or the guy from Seattle who, you know, was abusing his girlfriend, wife, or the kicker from the Giants, Josh Brown. Because I, in good conscience, I couldn't. They don't define most valuable player. I am on the panel. So they don't tell us this is what it has to be. They just say MVP. And I think it's most valuable player in the NFL. Not the most valuable player on your team necessarily, but in the NFL. And if you are an embarrassment to the NFL or you've done things that have been hurt your team, then I think yes, or hurt society, yeah, the brand of the NFL, then yeah, I think that should be taken into consideration. I think Rodgers missing a game is a knock against him. You know, I don't like the fact that he spreads misinformation and misrepresents science. I think that to me really bothers me, but it hasn't taken him out of the MVP race as far as I'm concerned.
So what you're saying is essentially, yes, how you conduct yourself off the field should make a difference, but it's hard to argue that what Rodgers has done off the field is on the same par as someone who has beat up their girlfriend or you know, done it, committed a crime.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really irresponsible in my viewpoint, what he's done. I don't know that anybody has followed him because not worn masks or not got vaccinated because of him. I don't know that to be 100% true. I would suspect some people have been influenced, but I don't know that for a fact. I just want people to know that that is a consideration for me. I just don't know if it's enough.
Yeah. Ryan?
It's hard to follow up Spoon there because, you know, what he says means a hell of a lot more to me. He's on the panel. He votes for MVP. I guess the way I see it is what you do off the field so long as it affects the team. And if you break laws and get suspended, like Ray Rice, that's affecting the team. If you don't break laws and you are not a cancer to the locker room, I don't think anything that Aaron Rodgers has done this season you can say has hurt the team. And yeah, he missed a game, but it didn't hurt the team because they're still the number one seed of the NFC. I don't think that you can vote on hypothetical, like what if it could have, but it didn't. It didn't. Yeah, I think you have to vote on reality, on what actually happened. So if you have a team that wrapped up the home field advantage in the first round bye with a week to go, Aaron Rodgers missing a game, in fact, did not hurt the team. I think that off the field matters in terms of how it affects on the field. And the most valuable player on the field, with that being a caveat, off the field being part of that, should be MVP.
Yeah. Well, he looks to be well on his way to a fourth MVP. And as we said, he would join Peyton Manning as the only ones to have done so. Peyton Manning told him on Monday night on the Manning cast, after you've won your fourth one, retire.
Don't that was hilarious.
That was hilarious. He's a funny man. He is a funny man. Great, great passer and a funny man, that Peyton Manning.
I honestly like Eli better. I think he is absolutely hilarious in a dry, subtle way. You know, Peyton's he's kind of a showman, you know, he's acting like he's a regular guy, but he's all polished and everything. Okay. Eli Manning is hilarious. Have you ever seen that Saturday Night Live skit where he's on trial and they have his phone for the text messages he's sent? And they're all like really embarrassing text messages. If you've ever looked that up, it is absolutely hilarious. Anyway.
I'll have to go look that one up. But yeah, I agree with you, Spoon. I think that, and I think I even tweeted this Monday night during the game. I said, Eli's so dry and subtle that you don't even realize he's like cut you until you stand back and you're like, where did all this blood come from? Like, oh, he's just been standing here stabbing me. But yeah, it was a good quarter watching Rodgers with the Manning brothers. Guys, stay warm. Spoon, I guess you don't have to worry about the snow as much, but still stay warm. And I will see y'all in Detroit this weekend.
The Motor City.
Detroit, let's do it. Detroit, Michigan in January. It's on the top of everybody's bucket list, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Only thing good about Detroit is the airport and the fact that the Westin is inside the airport. Only thing good about that city.
Well, I think I can't remember exactly where I booked. But anyways, I will see y'all there. Everyone listening, stay tuned for full coverage from this weekend as the Packers get ready to take on the Detroit Lions. This has been the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.